Today's Teisho will be on case two in the Haikigan Roku, the Blue Rock Collection. Joshu's The Real Way Is Not Difficult. Engo's Introduction. The universe is too narrow. The sun, moon, and stars are all at once darkened. Even if blows from the stick fall like raindrops, and the katsu shouts sound like thunder, you are still far short of the truth of Buddhism. Even the Buddhas of the three worlds can only nod to themselves, and the patriarchs of all ages do not exhaustively demonstrate its profundity. The whole treasury of sutras is inadequate to expound its deep meaning. Even the clearest-eyed monks fail to save themselves. At this point, how do you conduct yourself? Mentioning the name of the Buddha is like trudging through the mire. To utter the word Zen is to cover your face with shame. Not only those who have long practiced Zen, but beginners too, should exert themselves to aim directly at the secret. Main subject. Joshu spoke to the assembly and said, "The real way is not difficult. It only abhors choice and attachment." With what a single word there may arise choice and attachment, or there may arise clarity. This old monk does not have that clarity. Do you appreciate the meaning of this or not? The monk asked, "If you do not have that clarity, what do you appreciate?" Joshu said, "I do not know that either." The monk said, "If you do not know, how can you say you do not have that clarity?" Joshu said, "Asking the question is good enough. Now make your vows and retire." Secho's verse, "The real way is not difficult. Direct word, direct speech. One with many phases, two with one. Far away in the heavens, the sun rises, the moon sets. Beyond the hills, the high mountains, the cold waters. The skull has no consciousness, no delight. The dead tree sings in the wind, not yet rotten. Difficult, difficult. Attachment and clarity. Watch and penetrate the secret." This is day two of our sesshin, of our winter sesshin. You would never guess it's winter. I'm told this morning I met with Michael, and he gave me the word from outside the sesshin that it was 61 degrees yesterday. I think that's amazing. I mean, it certainly felt like that in the afternoon. It was last year, I think it was in the tens, it was 10 or so. And the year before, you may remember this, the year before it was zero. It went down to zero throughout the sesshin. We had sesshin the year before during one of the coldest periods of the year. And last year also very cold, but the previous year, I remember bringing the meals out for everybody to eat, and the snow was just falling. It was blowing crosswise. The wind was so powerful. And it was beautiful to sit there and look out those windows and see that snow. And, you know, it's been extraordinarily warm. I find myself, all the same, bracing for the cold. After we arrived here on Sunday night, we all went outside to go into the dorm after we sat, and I just found myself clenching up. And next day too, you know, I find myself bracing myself, and then I go out, and yesterday especially, it was like, well, this is not bad. And even last night, it must have been around dinner time, it must have been in the 50s. And you know, in Seattle, 50s, the many days in the summer in Seattle are in the 50s, let me just say. That might be a cool summer day in Seattle. And yet it's hard to shake the feeling that it's cold outside, even though it's not. And this is a force of habit, you know. I think that's interesting. We know it's winter, we know it's January, and so we're in a sort of mental set that it's very cold out there. But it's not. It's like spring. And that ought to tell us something about the way our presuppositions filter our experience. This is a wonderful koan about another koan today about Joshu traveling in China. And Joshu was very fond of the Xin Jin Ming, which we recite every morning. And he loved that poem, and he would recite it often when people would ask him questions about Zen or about Buddhism. The great way is not difficult. This is our translation by Richard Clark. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. The way is perfect, like vast space, where nothing is lacking and nothing is in excess. So, Zhaoxu, is traveling, and he comes to a temple, and he is asked to speak to the assembly. Joshu spoke to the assembly and said, "The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences." And then he goes on to say, "With but a single word there may arise choice and attachment, or then there may arise clarity. This old monk does not have that clarity. Do you appreciate this or not?" And then a monk said, "If you do not have that clarity, well, what do you appreciate?" "I don't know that either." "Well, if you don't know, how can you say you don't have the clarity?" So, I mean, basically he catches Zhaoxu up in a logical contradiction. And he says, "Do you have the clarity or not?" He says, "No." "Well, then aren't you judging?" "If you weren't judging, you wouldn't know if you had the clarity or not." So Joshu kind of just says, "Well, okay, you got me. You got me, pal. Asking the question is good enough. Now make your vows and retire." It's like, all right, you win. You win. But, you know, what did he win? Sometimes people imagine that Sesshin is about clarity. Even people will use the word purity. I often use the word purity. And clarity and purity are, relatively speaking, very important. So when you come to a session, usually your mind is a jumble of thoughts. This is day two, so probably our minds are just beginning to clarify, yes? So when you sat this morning, you might have found that the concerns that you brought with you to the session were less pressing and less present. What happens during a session is that around day two, people begin to let go a little bit of all the things that they want to hold on to and all the things they don't want to hold on to. They all start disappearing. And the mind begins to be much more present in the moment. And this is a wonderful thing, isn't it? I mean, it happens to me too. When I left home for the session, I too had many concerns. I had a deadline I had to meet. And it was barely, getting everything done is always a challenge. And when I was sitting yesterday, just like everybody else, I was thinking about issues. And this morning, when we sat, I had such a beautiful sit because I had really started to let them all go. And it didn't matter right now. Those things just didn't matter, you know. And I let them be. And they let me be. And beautiful clarity, right? Just in the moment, in the moment. And one way to think about Zen practice is that this is a process of purification. And as we go through our lives, we get ensnared in all kinds of concerns. We're playing at being alive, yeah? And we don't necessarily start out life being afraid or being anxious. But we're sort of schooled into knowing that things should make us anxious, things should make us fearful or worried. Now, I have occasionally met people who just didn't worry very much, you know, in their lives. But generally speaking, by the time you're an adult, you're encouraged to be worried, fretful, fearful, and so on. I have friends who are phobic, really, at work, friends who are just phobic about certain kinds of responsibilities. A lot of English professors don't like to be bureaucrats or organizers. They don't like to go to committees. They live in a very personal world, you know. You do your writing by yourself, you teach your classes, and you have personal relationships with your students. And that's the world of the English teacher. Very nice world, but they don't like to think about getting things done institutionally. And I have a job where I am the director of a very large program. And we have 11,000 students in our program every year. So I have to spend a lot of time planning minute details. And I spend a lot of my life going to meetings, like planning meetings. And so many of my friends who are much smarter than I am are so intimidated by this. I go, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have your job. I'm so glad I don't have your job. And it's something they've learned, maybe, I think, long ago, they learned how to be afraid of these things. Maybe one of their teachers said, oh my God, committee work, I just hate it. Or, oh, don't get caught up in that kind of thing. But somebody gave them the message that this was something to be afraid of. Years ago, I remember my wife and I were living in an apartment in Charlottesville, Virginia. And we had a landlord who insisted that we give him a first and last month rent, first month deposit, and the last month rent, and then pay, in addition, the regular rent. So he was holding 2 months in addition to what we were paying. So actually, that's illegal in the state of Virginia. I entered into the contract not knowing that. And anyway, my wife and I were living there in Charlottesville, and it turned out that I got accepted into graduate school in Seattle, Washington. And so I went to my landlord and I said, I'd like to have my last one back because I have to leave, and I'm not going to renew my contract. And at any rate, we had a dispute about whether I really owed him the first and the initial deposit and the last one. And I had an upcoming rent payment. This would have been our last payment. And I thought, well, I just won't pay it. Because, as I discovered later, it isn't legal to require that. So just decided I won't pay the rent this last month, and then we'll leave and we'll go to Seattle. And I talked on the phone to my father, and I told him of my plan, and he was terrified. He said, oh, you can't do that. You've got to pay it. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, don't you understand that if you don't pay that rent, when you get to graduate school, he could call the college up and have you thrown out of graduate school. And it would ruin your life. And my father was really afraid that this would happen. And so I paid it. And then I went to Seattle. And then I was talking to a friend of mine who was a lawyer, an attorney. And he said, oh, there was no way you should have paid that last month's rent. That was illegal, an illegal charge. I was surprised because I suddenly realized that my father, who I had respected so much, and I thought my father had understood the world so well, was really just irrationally afraid of making mistakes. Something in his own experience had just convinced him that this was the kind of thing I just shouldn't do. And I began to notice that my father was a much less sophisticated person. He was a lot more fearful than I had thought. And I think we all pick up habits like that in our lives. We learn how to be anxious. We learn how to be afraid. And it's very limiting. It really limits us in so many ways. So when we come to Zen Sashin, we can start overcoming those fears. Right? You sit on the cushion, and the first day, all those fears, all those anxieties, things that hold on to you are there. And then little by little, you begin to experience that clarity. And so one way to think of Zen is like purification. This is Sesshin is an opportunity to practice purification or deconditioning. You've been trained to be afraid, you've been trained to be worried, you've been trained so on and so on. This is your chance to sort of decondition. Somebody asked Master Joshu, do you have that clarity? Have you gone through that purification? And I guess we would expect that Joshu would say, yes, definitely. It's day three of Sesshin, day two of Sesshin. I am in that clarity. And he says, no, I don't know anything about clarity. I don't know anything about purity. And the monk doesn't appreciate this. He doesn't understand what Joshu is trying to say. But what he's saying is so profound, so important. There is a real truth to saying that when we come to Sesshin, we're clarifying our minds and we're purifying ourselves. But actually, that shows a certain limited perspective. It shows a certain lack of trust, actually, lack of trust. Great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. See, that is very hard to live that way. In the Christian tradition, Jesus said, it's not necessary to think about tomorrow. Consider the lilies of the field. They toil not, neither do they reap. Yet Solomon, in all his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. See, that's real trust. That's one of the most beautiful statements of trust that I've encountered anywhere in the world, in anything I've ever read. Don't worry about tomorrow. This is actually what Jesus said. In fact, it's possible to see that as the essence of Jesus' teaching. And my feeling is that this is exactly the same thing that Joshu is saying here. See, when we come to Sesshin in order to answer our koan, or even to free ourselves from our karmic impediments, we are still not giving ourselves over to life. We're still holding on. I don't know if you've had this experience, but every once in a while in my Zen practice, I would have these experiences where I felt a little bit of like vertigo or butterflies. It's like being on a high cliff and looking out and feeling a little bit frightened because you're so high up and it's so precarious, you know. Or it's like looking at the ocean. You know, every once in a while you can if you're looking at a beautiful sunny ocean, it's very relaxing. But every once in a while, if you're looking at the sea and you suddenly realize the vastness of the sea, it becomes slightly frightening. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. Being up high, maybe you've had that experience in your dreams. Sometimes in your dreams you can experience this sort of fear when you're high up. And some people even have dreams of being in the ocean, you know, and the vastness of the ocean is somewhat frightening. And the largeness of this world can be somewhat frightening. And even though people might say, well, I'm not frightened, actually, humans are quite frightened of the world, and myself included, by the way. I think we all are afraid of the vastness that underlies us. I think we're absolutely frightened of it. And what we usually do to deal with life is establish routines and stay in familiar patterns. And that's very reassuring, right? I mean, we learn to do this, but not to do that. And we can create little openings in our lives. So, you know, we do the same thing every summer, but then once a year we go to a different place on vacation. And it's like a controlled encounter with the universe, right? So it's predictable, safe, and stable. But, you know, sometimes we can go to Java or go to Costa Rica or something like that. And it's a little bit of an adventure, but we don't want too much of an adventure, right? Because that can get out of hand. You know, one way to think about Zen is that it's an opportunity to have this kind of bigger encounter with life. Sometimes we actually do feel on the cushion this sense of the vastness of it. You know, it can be a little bit frightening. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, but just this morning, maybe that's why I'm talking about it. Just this morning I had that feeling. It's where if you're really calling Mu and everything is falling away, for just a minute you get this feeling, this like the vastness of it all. And this is truly real, I believe. And when you begin to feel that vastness, it's slightly frightening. And I think Joshu lived in that vastness much of the time. And indeed, Sesshin is really about how to learn to live in that vastness. We are like fish who belong in the ocean, and that vastness is our ocean. But we're scared of going into the water. And so one way to think about Sesshin is purification, clarity, and so on. But on a deeper level, this is about going into that ocean with our whole being, our whole heart, and not worrying about the outcomes or conditions, having no expectations. And this is like really a wonderful way to practice. You don't have to have had an experience of that vastness to do it. This is sort of Joshu's way of practicing Zen. Linji Rinzai had his way, and Nansen had his way, and Wangbo had his way. And I think Joshu's way was constantly to live in that vastness, you know, constantly going back to that feeling you get every once in a while of infinite space in all directions. And in order to live in that condition, you really have to just have absolute trust. And this is quite rare, but you can cultivate that in your practice, every moment of your practice. You know, in fact, cultivating trust is the path to that vastness. So if you cultivate trust in your practice, that vastness begins to open up naturally. And this is Joshu's message. This is what Joshu is trying to say. You know, there's a very famous Zen saying, it goes like this, every day is a good day. That was said by a Zen master who was dying. they came to talk to him and said, how are you doing? He said, oh, I'm in a lot of pain, but every day is a good day. So, you could get up every day and just say, every day is a good day. That would be a good way to start every day of sushi. Or you can just remind yourself as you go about your practice. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. This is about, in the Christian tradition, again, beautifully said, thy will be done. Thy will be done. So whatever this day brings is Buddha. Whatever this breath brings is Buddha. Whatever this sit brings is Buddha. Now, all of the people here today are old hands. We've been practicing together for a number of years, and it's just been wonderful. And I'm very happy you're here. A number of people couldn't come for 7 days. Some of them were busy, and some of them were a little bit frightened by the vastness of it all. I mean, honestly, I'm not criticizing anybody, but I know that some people could have come, but they think, that's just a little bit more than I can handle. I know that's true. And I'm not at all disappointed. Someday they'll be here for 7 days. And in the meantime, I'm very happy to see them for 5 days. But you came here to practice for 7 days, and that shows this wonderful thy will be done spirit. Right? Now, at a certain point, you're not practicing anymore to answer your koan. You're not practicing anymore to free yourself from unhappiness. You're practicing to participate in the unfolding of the beautiful universe. And that's a so philosophical way to put it. So much better to just say, thy will be done. Thy will be done. Much, much more direct. Right? You are the universe, and I am the universe. And when we sit on the cushion, this is a universe expressing a trust in itself. How beautiful, beautiful practice. This is the essence of the Joshi's path. The Joshi's path is very, very close to this, thy will be done. I will never forget, really, my first glimpse of this was with Genki Roshi, my first teacher. I was trying to solve some problems for our group. We were having some very heated debates about the future of our group in Seattle, our meditation group, and we were really getting very agonized about problems we were having with the location for sitting practice, and we had all gone really all over the city trying to find a new place to hold the meditation, and we came up with a location near a railroad track, which wasn't very good because we'd be sitting in the zendo and then the train would come by and it would be like this deafening noise. And so we had all spread out across Seattle trying to find another place. And as our lease was running up, we were getting more and more desperate. We didn't want to stay there. And it created a real panicky environment, or a tense environment. And I remember Genki Roshi coming to one, as I remember, I may not be remembering correctly, but either I was talking to Genki Roshi about it or he came to one of the meetings, but he just laughed and he said, listen, everything has a way of unfolding naturally. If it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen. And if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And this was so liberating for me. It was just, it was like, my God, I had this huge weight on my back. And I felt morally responsible for all of this. And it was really crushing me. And suddenly he took this weight off my shoulders and I just felt so wonderful. He said, of course, you know, it's not, it's just not happening. And I remember one other moment where I was in graduate school and I was going under tremendous pressure, a really very competitive environment. And I was not doing very well. And I was coming to sit at Kugeyong, the Roshi's place where he lived. Every morning I would go there, we would all go there, and that's where we had morning sitting. And I remember, for some reason, Genki just said, it seemed like out of the blue, but he said to another person that I was within hearing of everybody, he said, don't you know life is absolutely impossible? And again, it was just so liberating. Right? So, of course, it really is. Life is absolutely impossible. You know, it's a bundle of contradiction. It's impossible, really. You know, just going forward sometimes seems absolutely impossible. And yet, you know, every day the sun comes up in the sky. You know, it's amazing. You know, this could really be like a global warming. Who knows? And this could just be a typical fluctuation. 61 degrees in the middle of January. I haven't seen that here in New Jersey in 21 years, but maybe it happens. Could be global warming. You know, it could be like a world catastrophe. Every life is impossible. But whatever is going to happen, it's going to happen. This is one way, anyway, one way to walk the Zen path. Right? Yes, you come to Sesshin early on to free yourself from your suffering. You come to Sesshin, you're out of suffering, and suddenly you think, well, I'd like to get somewhere with my Zen practice. Maybe I can, you know, answer some koans. But then at some point, that motive too disappears, and there's just this beautiful, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. You know, why are you here? Why are you here? You know, I have the feeling that all of you are beyond that question. It's not a real question anymore. If you're here, another way to put it is your true nature told you to be here. You've learned to listen to the voice of your true nature. And that's really wonderful. Of course, we all have moments when we don't necessarily want to hear the voice of our true nature. Or when we're feeling a little bit distrustful, like a day three of Sesshin, somewhere in your mind there might be the thought, I ought to just get out of here. But I know that you wouldn't be here if you hadn't listened to that voice, the voice of your true nature. So, let's just practice in this beautiful spirit. Now, whether we answer our koan or not is just a discriminating mind speaking, right? Let's practice Joshu's way. Right? Just the great way is not difficult for those who have no purpose. Thy will be done. My will be done. Right? My will be done. Not to Kurt, but the whole universe is my true self. So let's practice like this today and see what happens. I think it'll be just wonderful. And Joshu spoke to the assembly and said, "The great way is not difficult. It only abhors choice and attachment. With but a single word there may arise choice and attachment, or there may arise clarity. This old monk does not have that clarity. Do you appreciate the meaning of this or not?" Then a monk said, "If you don't have the clarity, what do you appreciate?" Joshu said, "I don't have that either. I don't know that either." The monk said, "If you do not know, how can you say you do not have that clarity?" Joshu said, "Asking the question is good enough. Now make your vows and retire." He said, "Don't worry. Someday you'll be here. You'll be here. Thy will be done. Someday. You haven't seen it yet, but when you see it, it'll be wonderful. So just keep practicing." Secho's verse, "The real way is not difficult. Direct word, direct speech. One with many phases, two with one. Far away in the heavens, the sun rises, the moon sets. Beyond the hills, the high mountains, the cold waters. The skull has no consciousness, no delight. The dead tree sings in the wind, not yet rotten." Seems like such a sad image, doesn't it? To be a dead skull with no consciousness, dead tree sings in the wind. How a little bit scary, isn't it? But don't be deceived by appearances. This is like a scarecrow in the field to chase away the birds. You know, if you have no expectations, everything is completely, the Buddha called it the deathless. When you really say, "Thy will be done," when you really say, "This moment is Buddha," this is the deathless. So this is like a skull with no consciousness, dead tree in the wind, that's like a scarecrow. A Halloween mask to frighten little kids. Not real. Difficult. Attachment and clarity. Watch and penetrate the secret. It's not difficult for those who have no preferences. There's no secret. So please, practice this.